Well, for those of you who were here last week, you may recall that Jonathan kind of stole my thunder, right? From the story of Thomas and his unbelief. But never mind, that's okay. I'm not really going to preach about that, so it all worked out. I'm preaching about the gospel, no worries, but the second Sunday of Easter, all three lessons center on the theme of faith and hope, and perhaps a tiny bit of doubt, as expressed by Thomas. But the doubt seems to disappear when Thomas encounters Jesus face to face and exclaims, "My Lord and my God." The author of John's Gospel emphasizes, toward the end of the passage, that this story has been told for the benefit of our faith, so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, he writes, and that through believing, you may have life in his name. So that you may come to believe. Interesting wording. Some scholars translate it this way, so that you may continue to believe. Wording may seem like a small thing, but if you're a word lover like I am, it can be very important. And I'd like us to dig into it just a little bit. Think for a second. Which is it? Coming or continuing? And which might you prefer? I wonder if maybe it would be better for us to ask, which describes where I am today, at this moment? Am I coming into belief? Think of Thomas before he saw Jesus up close after the resurrection, kind of wondering, are you seeking faith, seeking hope? Or are we more like Mary Magdalene? Upon meeting Jesus outside the empty tomb, she still carried her faith so deeply. Are we continuing to believe? Are we reaffirmed and encouraged in our faith with our encounter with the living God? Well, I might suggest that we could agree that faith might be rather fluid. It ebbs and flows, stronger and more convincing on some days, and maybe a little bit timid and in need of a boost on other days. And it seems to me as I think about it that that pretty much describes a life of faith. An in-betweenness, if you will, moving back and forth from certainty through doubt and back again. And maybe the disciples found themselves there too, yearning for the faith that would move mountains, believing in Jesus' power, feeling that something had changed, and yet facing an uncertain future in a world that had rejected and killed their Lord. Can we admit to ourselves, and maybe to each other, that we share those very human feelings of doubt and hope? Might we see ourselves as both coming to believe and continuing to believe? More and more deeply as our faith grows, as our relationship with God deepens, as we try to live into the abundant life offered to us by our loving Creator. So how do we claim that abundant life? How can we both come to believe and continue to believe in a world full of doubt, malice, and hopelessness? Well, I'm reading a book right now that points us in what I think is an interesting direction. The name of it is The Day the Revolution Began, and it's by N.T. Tom Wright, one of the best known and most respected Bible scholars of our day. He is a bishop in the Church of England, one of our own, a professor of New Testament at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, and a best-selling author. Wright argues that by 6 p.m. on Good Friday, the world had changed forever. Jesus' death had marked the beginning of a revolution. And as he writes, with this event, God had suddenly and dramatically put into action his plan for the rescue of the world. God was reconciling the world to himself in the Messiah. And Wright offers what is to me an exciting premise, which is that because of God's action on Good Friday, each of us has a vocation to join in God's plan. And our vocation is one, he writes, of being a genuine human being with genuinely human tasks to perform as part of the Creator's purpose for the world. Our main task, he writes, is image bearing, which he describes as reflecting the Creator's wise stewardship into the world and reflecting the praises of all creation back to its maker. This, Wright believes, is how creation was designed to function and flourish under the stewardship of the image bearers. Do you find that exciting? Here we are, humans with feet of clay, and this wonderful writer and theologian exclaims that we each have a purpose, a divine purpose, a part in God's plan for the restoration of all of creation. So, praise, worship, stewardship, offered to the world and on behalf of the world, in the image of God, the Creator. We live authentically into our vocation, and when we do, we find abundant life. Stewardship of creation is a particularly timely topic for today. You may know that yesterday was Earth Day, and this upcoming week is recognized as Faith Climate Action Week by an organization called Interfaith Power and Light. Two members of our parish, Paula Keough and Marty Ames, have organized several activities at Grace Church today, and Jonathan will be speaking a little bit more about those. But for instance, they're encouraging us, these activities encourage us all to recognize and to exercise our stewardship of God's creation. The children, for instance, are in the Chafee Room as we speak, creating prayer flags in their Sunday school, and their materials in the narthex for you to send a message to our nation's leaders about why you value creation. And I encourage you to consider being part of this effort. But stewardship of creation is just one part of our vocation. We are also called to be part of God's plan to heal the whole world, the earth, and all the creatures, including our human brothers and sisters. So on this second Sunday of Easter, let us think about how we, each of us and all of us together, can reflect God's wise and loving stewardship out into the world, and how we can Answer our call and our responsibility to reflect the praise of creation to God. Let us continue to nurture each other in our faith as we both come to believe and continue to believe. And let's encourage one another as image bearers of God's good intentions for the whole of creation. Amen.